We're good. We're good. All right. Thank you so much. You literally got off the plane.
I got off the plane and I came right here.
Thank you very much.
You're my first stop.
For doing that. Thanks so much for thinking of me and then coming in. And obviously you're in town for, you want to share?
Building Science Symposium is the first BS and beer style symposium in Canada. April 23rd, 24th, downtown Mill Street Brewery in the Distillery District. I'm not from Toronto, so if I get my directions a little bit mixed up, but yeah. So we're going to talk.
It's a great part of the city. It's a, you know,
I've been there once. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah.
They used to make spirits there long, long time ago. Now they're selling spirits there.
Well, we're going to talk a little building science, not BS.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be some BS too. And we might have a beer or two while we're educating ourselves, educating others.
Yeah. You know what I'll do is I'll actually get this show out on the Monday so we can let everybody know. But is there any way to get in? No, you can't. Oh, so it's never mind.
Sold out.
Doesn't matter. So you just have to pay attention to posts that are being shared at that point.
That's it. Just pay attention to social media. That's it.
Let me do quickly, Big Dog Construction, Aaron Jones at bigdogconstruction.gm. I am wearing Maple Leaf Construction's jersey today, or t-shirt today. I want to do another shout out to Liburn Plumbing. This week has been an interesting week for plumbers. I don't know if you've been paying attention to a lot of the plumbing. Yeah, there's been a little bit of conversations going on, but him and I, we had a rather lengthy, it was like maybe this long on my phone, like just conversations back and forth. And then I really appreciate it. I love all these conversations, right? But he ended the conversation by saying, and I'll quote him, "I don't think I could watch you go Mike Holmes on us, Manny. Not gonna lie." And I just responded saying, "That will never happen, okay?" And then I just want to do another quick shout out to Halton _ drywall _ taper. He sent me a nice message. He was just saying, "Brother, I just want to thank you for representing the industry." And I was like, "Thanks so much. I appreciate that." And then one last one. I got Bell _ Italia _ surface. Guy's he's an artist, in my opinion. He's doing all the Venetian and micro cementing. And
nice.
And he's got his secrets. He's coming on the show. Not to get rid of all the secrets, he's going to teach some, but not all of it. And because I've got a lot of respect for him, because the way he does it, he literally is going back to the old country, learning what they did, and then bringing it to the new country and putting it in people's homes. But
yeah, but if a guy showed up and was willing to put the effort in, he'd teach him, right?
For sure he would.
Okay.
For sure he would.
But he doesn't want to give up
all the secrets to thinking that all of a sudden DIYers can turn around and get a box and put this stuff together and then just grab a trowel and put it on the wall. Hire a professional is my mindset. That's how I look at it. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermery, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermery to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermery difference is to hold the real thing in your hands, so visit their website today at www.thermeryusa.com and also find them on IG at @thermeryusa. Contractors, it's time to empower your business with Shelta Tech implementation. Shelta is offering a free meeting to tackle your biggest pain points head on. Their goal, to develop a custom company app that's built just for you, solving your pain points, streamlining your processes, making your workday smoother. Here's the scoop. There's a $15,000 digital adoption grant available, and Shelta is an expert at helping you secure it. This isn't just funding, it's your stepping stone into a new era of digital efficiency. By your second meeting, you'll get a tailor-made company playbook, a software prototype designed with your input, project tracking, real-time budget management, and daily logs, all integrated into a single app. It's tech that works for you, not the other way around. Shelta isn't just offering tech, they're offering transformation. Join the community of 93 subcontractors who have already stepped up their game with Shelta Tech. Two meetings, countless opportunities, ready to make a move? Visit Shelta.app. Let's pave the way to smarter, tech-driven future. Shelta Technology, custom tech solutions for the modern contractor. Choose Dahl for your plumbing needs and discover the peace of mind that comes with their unwavering reliability and exceptional service. Experience the Dahl difference and join the growing community of contractors who trust in their expertise and rely on their products. Check out Dahl at www.dahlvalve.com and on social at Dahl Valve. Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than Elastichem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, Elastichem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Seeking top-tier windows? Look no further. Payne's Window Manufacturing is the ultimate choice for custom builders, contractors, and homeowners. Visit www.paynes.com now to experience the pinnacle of quality and customization. Get your instant custom quote today. Elevate excellence with us. Plus, enjoy nationwide shipping across Canada and the U.S. All right, so where do you want to begin, Aaron? I wanna actually start by how is it getting easier to be sustainable? Easier in Canada? And I know it's a loaded question.
It is a loaded question. I think it depends. It depends a little bit on your location.
Yeah.
It also depends on your clientele.
Very much.
And I mean, it's always going to go back to budget. To be green still costs more. Maybe you don't like the green sort of label. Maybe you want to use sustainable. But, you know, I always tell people it has to be durable and it has to be repeatable where you built.
Okay.
So, you know, for example, and this is just throwing stuff out there, and it's not necessarily the greenest product, but Rockwool Comfort Board.
Yeah.
Can I get it on Graham and Ann Island? No, I have to order it in. And if
What's
I want
the additional cost to order it?
And I've got to order 500 sheets.
Oh, there's a MIM. Okay.
So for one project, depending on the size of the project, it might not be worth it.
Is there a comparable product?
There's other comparable products that are not available locally either.
Same thing.
But what I would say is there's more and more products coming on the market in North America that are comparable or equivalent to stuff we see in Europe. So it's a matter of time. Just a little bit south of me, well, south and west of me in Madison, Maine, they've started the wood fiber mill there, and we've got, you know, you already see it all over the U.S. They've got timber fill, timber bat, and they're going to have a timber board out shortly.
Nice.
So you're taking scrap. It's basically a carbon negative product. You can't, you know, that's not, it's not sponsored content for HP, but they make a good product.
It's basically
and it's
100%
waste. Sustainable.
It was waste, right? At some point, and someone looked at it, and now they're turning it into a product that's got a purpose.
Absolutely.
Which is what we want to do.
Yeah. So it's coming. It's just we're not quite there yet. What I would try and steer people towards is if you build me a structure that's going to last at least 200 years, that nobody's going to have to do any major repairs. Yeah, they're going to redecorate. They're going to do whatever. But we're not going to take 50 feet of exterior wall and throw it in the dumpster 7 years from now.
No.
that's sustainable.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have to rebuild it, if it lasts the 200 years, you've got your life cycle out of that. At least I'd like to see it last 500 years, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, but...
But today's clientele, and it is, okay, I love that you brought up the numbers, right? From my research, to actually build sustainable, it's anywhere from 5 to 20% increase in costs.
I would agree with that.
Right? And then, but here's the payback is anywhere from 5 to 20 years, mm-hmm. right? And here's the issue now. According to Stats Canada, I'm going to go with Canadian Mortgage Housing Corporation, CMHC, the average duration of an ownership of a dwelling in Canada. What do you think that is?
7 years.
13.
13. Okay, it's come up.
I'm going to disagree with that. I don't think it's 13. There's no way. I think it's less than 10. So I think it's closer to the 7. But they're, according to them, they're saying it's 13. Because I'm seeing people, we see people flip these. Yep. So the sustainable argument with homeowners, if you're looking at 5 to 20 payback, you're looking at a 5 to 20 increase, and you're getting rid of the house in 13, how many homeowners are going to want to do these extra things? Because it's not their property anymore. And I know off mic before we got started, when we just, you know, we're having a coffee out there, we were talking about how, you know, the generational kind of thing, how the European mentality is differently. And all of a sudden I started thinking about in the 70s, Canada was a sustainability hub with Saskatchewan. Germans came here, they figured it out, they proved it in the coldest of winters, and then we lost our way. And I guess it got into the greedy 80s.
Yeah, it's so, you know, 1978, Harold Orr pumped the conservation house out. We invited the world, like the literally the world.
Canada, this little nation. Yeah. Yes.
Come check this out.
Yeah.
See how cool this is. And the rest of the world went back to their respective homes, took that information, ran with it. We went, you know what? This is really cool, but gas is 30 cents a liter. Fuel oil is whatever a liter, and it's expensive to build this way. We don't really need to, and so we didn't.
We never did it.
It never caught on. It's still always been there on the fringes, and passive house is coming back. It mm-hmm. really is, and in a market like Vancouver, I think they're under 8% to build, 8% more to build sustainably or reasonably sustainably and energy efficiently, or passive house maybe. On the East Coast, we're more. We're more. And it's still smaller market, so getting products. There's ways to do it, but you know, you've got to have the right clientele. We're hitting a happy medium with most of our clientele. We're like, I call it a pretty good house on steroids. You know, we're a passive house in a lot of ways, but we don't meet the criteria. And then there's also a cost of certification if you want to go passive house too.
So where's the stumbling block? Is it the aesthetics and the keeping up with the Joneses? I've never heard a client saying, hey, come in here and take a look at the cross section of my wall. Like that stuff doesn't happen. We do it because we love it. The thicker, the better, and the different layers and all kinds of components, but clients don't do that.
It's all over the place, I think. There's, depending on the clientele you have and where they are in their life, the last few houses that we've done, they were for a clientele that are doing a retirement home. So they're looking at, okay, I know how much money that I've got coming in every month. I want it to be efficient. I want it to be durable. I want it to be low maintenance.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were willing to spend extra money on windows, extra money on insulation because they wanted the comfort aspect of it.
Yep.
We've done some second homes for people that, yeah, they want to be comfortable. And we've had one client who, you know, they've become friends now. That's how we know when we've had a good client is now they're friends. And their second home, they recognize that it's quieter, it's more comfortable, the air quality is a little better. And that's what it's all about. It's comfort, efficiency. You can't sell efficiency, but you can sell comfort.
You could totally do that, yeah. On the East Coast, are they pushing the green, the electric more than the gas?
It's It's coming.
Okay.
It's coming.
Oh, it hasn't
like,
been.
Fuel oil is being driven out for a number of reasons, like furnace oil. Heat pumps are better than they've ever been. You know, a ductless split costs nothing compared to, you know, putting in an air handler, running oil, ductwork everywhere. So budget is helping in that respect.
But I go back to the 80s where Toronto was guilty of this. They kind of forced people to go the electric route because the electricity rates were just next to nothing. It was peanuts at that time. But then what happened in the 90s? It just skyrocketed. So anybody who got stuck with the electric, it just became very, very expensive for them to maintain. And then they started doubling back and going into the gas part of it.
Well,
that could happen here.
It could happen, but we're going the route of electrification. Whether you're on board for it or you're not on board, you're going to get drugged there kicking and screaming, or you can go willingly.
Here's my argument, Aaron. Like, wouldn't it make more sense to spend the time and effort, first of all, build smaller?
Mm.
Okay, you don't, if you've got a lot that's whatever, 50 feet wide, 100 feet deep or whatever, you don't need a house that's 40 feet wide.
Yeah.
You need a house that's like 25 to 30 feet wide at the most, right? So build smaller and build thicker walls. Build a more efficient shell, windows, walls, roof, slab, all that stuff, right? And then choose your mechanical side on what to heat or how to heat it. Because that upfront cost is like, that'll never change. You can't, like you said earlier, you can't take the wall down. You could change the windows if you wanted to. But if you're going, you know, triple, if you're going to the extreme of that rent, then all of a sudden those windows are going to last a lot longer and be more efficient, right?
Well, that's part of what we do with our clients anyways. We try and educate them. One of the first things we do is we give them a pretty good house book and take a stab at what the footprint of our last two builds were.
I have no idea. It's going to be a lot smaller than what it is typically
30 by 32.
See, to me, that's a comfortable house.
Guess what the size of the next house we're building is?
About the same?
30 by 32.
You figured like it out.
It's a good size footprint. It's more than adequate for somebody who's retiring.
Yeah.
It's more than adequate for a vacation home.
What do you have there? You have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath?
So they all differ slightly.
Yeah.
But on average, they're 2-bedroom and 2-bath.
Okay.
On average, I would say.
Okay.
So it depends on whether they're, you know, have a walkout basement or whether they're on a crawl space, because you got to have some sort of foundation anyways, whether it's a slab or a crawl space or a full foundation. And if you happen to have a lot that utilizes a walkout, well, make use of that.
Yeah, of course. So, get some extra space down there.
Yeah.
And then have a little bit more.
It does drive the cost up, and you have more cubic feet to heat and cool, but you're still keeping it to a reasonable size footprint. And if we insulate it well and we air seal it well, then that cost goes down considerably.
And so the clients are fine with that, or are they kind of giving you a little bit of resistance that we would want a little bit more square footage?
I would say we're fortunate that at least in recent history, clients are looking for this from us. They want that comfort, and they know that if they come see us, that they're going to get something that's airtight and done right.
Is it kind of like they've been conditioned to want bigger because of what they see on social media and what they're comparing to? I guess when we were younger, me personally, I was on College Street in a house that was probably as wide as this room. 5 kids, 2 parents, a couple of dogs. And to me, in my memory, it was massive. We had the 3 bedrooms, 1 bedroom for the boys, 1 bedroom for the girls, 1 bedroom for the parents, right? We had 2 bathrooms, one, a second one in the basement, and the only one on the top, right? There was no powder room. But in my mind, that house was massive. But when you get older, I guess all of a sudden you start thinking, I want more space. So then you start buying something bigger and bigger. And now we're trying to get people to go back to smaller. You don't need all this space.
Well, I think we're going to get there. I won't say we're there because you've still got people who think, well, a starter home is 1,600 square feet. That's twice the size of a starter home.
Yeah.
You know, one of the first houses I had was 800 square feet. And, you know, could you raise a family in that? Absolutely you could. Just people are conditioned to think that, well, I need that 14, 16, 18, 2200 square feet. How much time do you actually spend in your bedroom?
Not a lot.
No,
sleeping.
Sleeping.
Period. Sleeping and getting ready.
Sleeping and getting ready. Yeah. So do you need a 20 by 24 master suite?
Nope.
No. No, you don't. Walk-in closet might be nice.
A good size master's ensuite, sure, because you're going to be using that every day, every evening.
Sure. But it doesn't have to be this massive, massive space. And design plays a huge factor. If you lay out 960 square feet well, I would argue that it could perform as well, if not better than, well, guaranteed it'll perform better than a poorly laid out 1400 square
feet. Of course, for sure.
So just use the space you have, eliminate dead space, organize it in a flow that will work for your client's lifestyle.
Let me give you a list of 10 things, and you tell me what's the most important, what's the least.
Okay.
All right? Let's just have a little bit of fun here. Resale value, technology regarding smart home features, outdoor living space, budget and affordability, customizable options, quality of the construction, energy efficiency, size and space, design and layout, and location. What's the one that jumps out at you that should be the most important?
Quality.
The quality of the construction, right?
Yeah.
What's the least out of all those?
Smart technology.
Smart technology. I'd agree with you on that. Where does location, you can make any place kind of work.
Well,
right?
You can make any kind of place. And it depends on somebody's criteria. But if it's not quality, it's probably not going to last.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't function, it doesn't really matter
then what's the point, right? But then the quality goes right to energy efficiency, right?
I guess maybe
budget and affordability would be second because you have to pay attention to that.
Well, so the thing is you can still get quality on a budget.
Yeah.
It's just you have to maybe lower your expectations of what you want. And it goes back to, okay, I want this 1,600 square foot whatever. Well, hey, I can build you a much better house that will suit your needs for now, and it will allow you room to grow whatever, you know, your life is, whatever direction your life is planning on going. We can plan for that.
Yep.
And, yeah, we're going to give you a smaller space, but it's going to fit your budget. It's going to cost you less to operate annually than the 1,600 square foot.
I totally agree with you. We see a lot of young pups in construction industry. How much of them are actually paying attention to where we are? Because obviously you and I are probably having these conversations with our circle about where our last home is going to be or what we want for our last home, right? They're not thinking that. They're in their 20s and 30s, right?
No. It depends on the young person you're talking about.
True.
But I would say some of them are worried about where their first home is going to be. Like they know where they're living right now, but they haven't bought that first home. It's a valid point.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's an accessibility issue to that market that hopefully will improve. Hopefully, but we'll see. But I don't think anybody under 30, well, a very small percentage of people under 35 are worried about where their last home is going to be.
They're not thinking about it. They're definitely thinking about
it. I wasn't thinking about it when I was 35.
No, but we didn't have this market. We didn't have all this perfect storm going on right now, right?
No, we did not.
Economical perfect storm, right?
And it's really gone crazy in the last like 5-8 years.
Is there a way to reverse it? And I guess it goes back to the argument of sustainability, because now you're going to, we just want to find a place. I don't care if the walls are 2 inches thick. We just want to find a place.
I don't think we can reverse it, at least not in the next 10 years.
No.
We have to come up with a viable long-term solution that's going to make things work, not just for the next 25 years, but like you got to have a 100-year plan. You really do. And hopefully somebody comes up with a better plan before that 100 years is up. What I would say is we need to start building affordable housing today. We don't need 40 committees with 85 subcommittees and 120 studies done on how to build affordable housing. We need to just start building affordable housing. Like, it might not be perfect, but let's just pick a plan and let's build some. Let's start.
We're still getting a lot of gatekeeping going on here in Toronto. I don't know how it is out east there. I don't even know too much about out west, because out west, when I look at and I pay attention to the builders that are going on out there, it's just monsters that they're building because the wealth is there. And so it's like, it's fascinating for me to look at mountains being, you know, broken down to adhere a house to it. And I'm like, that's got nothing to do with affordability. Yeah. Maybe have something to do with sustainability and where, how they're building it. But in the core here in Ontario, which is the bulk of the population, a lot of people are trying to do ADUs. They're trying to get that started. And all of a sudden, they get a lot of resistance through the whole zoning permit process. And like, there's, you're going on 6 to 8 months now sometimes to get, even get the approvals.
Well, I can't speak too much about ADUs, but I can talk about multifamily.
Yeah.
Because you, anywhere in Canada, everybody wants, oh, we need affordable housing. We want multifamily. Oh, but not in my backyard. Like if you want to go like six blocks over, yeah, you can do a 12.
But that was the argument
there
back in the 90s and early 2000s about, sure, put the affordable housing in this area.
Yeah.
Not where I'm at, but in this area.
Well, they don't even care what area. They just don't want it next door to them.
Am I crazy to think, because it's funny how, okay, I honestly think, okay, payphones are done, right?
Yep.
Payphones are gone. Like, if anybody finds one, great. Take a picture and take it on the Polaroid if you want, because it's totally nostalgic at that point. But am I crazy to think that the land where malls are, build homes there?
Why not?
Like, are we not purchasing digitally these days? Do we not have to bother ourselves to go in to try something on where there's a 100% return policy? Everyone's gone to Costco and people have used it during the entire year and then returned it and they still took it. So it's like, I look at this land that's always massive. That's a lot of land that you can park a lot of homes that could help a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, there is vacant land everywhere. I've been in talks with a gentleman in St. John in New Brunswick. And he started an initiative called Vacant to Vibrant. And he is like actively trying to find vacant buildings, vacant land, and let's do something with
What's
it.
What's his name?
Brent Harris.
Okay.
Brent Harris.
And his organization is called?
Well, he's in a couple things. He's got the St. John Tool Library.
Okay.
And he's got Vacant to Vibrant.
Yeah, I want to check
that
out.
He's just a counselor at large. I'll get his information.
Yeah, yeah, totally cool. Because that makes a lot of sense, right?
And so he's an interesting guy to have a conversation with too.
Yeah.
So
because we should be looking at those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about it briefly. One of the things he's looking at doing is ADUs inside of a arena.
Now, isn't it like, how far away are we with the ADUs? I know that, you know, here in Toronto, we have Joel from Laneway Homes, and he's kind of perfected that really well. And he's doing really well, really good projects. But it's just, I know that when I have conversations with clients or I talk to people and they start inquiring, how much is an ADU like that? And I was like, well, first of all, it's more expensive than the house that's being built. I'm sorry to say. So just accept that bite that from the budget to begin with, right? But how far away are we from those units being built? So his units are larger than the smaller, smaller scale ADUs, right? How far away are we from the time where that land between the main dwelling and that dwelling is going to be consumed by another dwelling?
I think
should we go down that route?
Not in our lifetime.
But you don't think it might happen? Someone's going to someone's going to challenge it.
It quite feasibly could happen, but I don't think you're looking at anything in the next 20, 25 years in that regard.
Yeah, yeah.
30, 40, 50, absolutely, that could be an issue then. Well, it's always going to be an issue because there's going to be the people on the pro side and there's going to be people on the con side of that. But densification is coming. It has to.
Yeah.
We only have so much usable land. They're not making any more land. They quit doing that a couple billion years ago. That's it. So nobody wants to really live in climate zone 8.
Yeah.
Climate zone 7 is rough enough already. There's a few people who love climate zone 8, but the bulk of us want to live, you know, right across
the
near
belt.
The border.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I get it. We're here, we're lower than a lot of, the upper states.
You are.
Right?
You are.
So our climate is somewhat better, I guess, but that's perspective.
Well, it is perspective.
Yeah.
It is perspective. There's, you know, what's the air quality like in Toronto versus Grand Manan Island? Right?
How's it go with you? Because I remember having these conversations early in my career with clients where you're doing additions. And obviously you want to present the knowledge that you captured from going to PKs or from going to trade shows or even just networking in the industry within, right? And all of a sudden you start doing this addition and you want to do the right thing on the addition. But then I guess there's no way to really calculate the math on the existing dwelling to figure out what's the original dwelling doing for the new dwelling part of it.
So my experience with additions, they've usually been because someone needed something.
The space.
They needed the space. And usually when I ended up doing a lot of additions, it was because it was a buyer's market, not a seller's market. So, you know, instead of going someplace new, which would have the space, it made more sense for them to build on, you know, to what they had. Take money they had because interest rates were high,
yep,
and build on.
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to get the money I need out of my house to go buy something bigger, so I'm just going to make my house bigger. That's been my experience. Maybe I'm just fortunate that way. And usually when people came looking for an addition, they were pretty good clients. They knew what they wanted and they were willing to spend a little extra for quality.
Yeah.
So,
but it's always a conversation at that point, right? Because you're trying to figure out how do I... It's almost like it's a magic bullet. They want to just make the rest of the house as good as that new addition because you're using the new technology. But the thing is, that's not really what's going to happen. There's going to be a little bit of it, but it's not going to completely change that front part of the house.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't fix everything, but, you know, and we've talked about eras of construction before, but if you're adding on or you're renovating a portion, you should make it, you should do the best job you possibly can within, yep, a given budget.
Yep.
And there are so many different products available that you can do good quality work with that don't break the bank. You don't have to have all the latest and greatest products from Europe to do something that's well insulated and airtight. They exist.
Yep.
Some of them are easier to detail than stuff that maybe is produced in North America, but you can still do it.
What is the mindset, I guess, of the tradesperson on the site? They're so used to, I guess it's difficult for the union guys, where they're so used to doing it one way that that's how they were taught. This is how it's being done. This is where the budget allocation is about. But then the moment you give them something to actually pull down a membrane or to flatten it out properly, they get a little lost, right?
So a lot of it has to do with, I had to say it, but age groups.
Yeah.
There's a large percentage of guys with gray hair out there who've been doing it for 25, 30, 35 years, and I've been doing it this way, and it works.
Yep.
So that's what I want to do. That's how I know how to do it, and I don't want to – it's not that they don't want to do better. They just are not interested in going down the new road.
We know them. We totally know them. We see them, right?
And then you've got – other people that, you know, have a curious mind. Okay, well, why would I do that? And if you can explain to them the benefit, whatever the benefit is some will listen, some will dismiss it. But if you have a conversation with 10 people and after 10 conversations, one person has decided that they're going to build better, it's a win, you know?
That's what you really want. I mean, I remember when I was first getting into construction, I was joining Blue Green Group. Blue Green was having boots on the ground events, and they were inviting all kinds of different people that were in construction at different levels of construction. And it was just nice to just walk around and just overhear a certain statement and then join that conversation and start picking their brain. It was great for me in the beginning because I didn't know anything. And I was walking in there as a sponge. I was like, okay, tell me more about this. I'm curious more. And then all of a sudden I would go look into it myself. That's like 15 years ago they were doing that. Yeah. They did it for a few years and it was great. But not too many smaller networking events are happening, right?
There's still boots on the ground events happening.
Yeah.
There's one in Halifax at the end of March. I just getting back from Rhode Island. I couldn't go to it. I wanted to go to it.
Yeah.
But you can't be everywhere and do everything.
No, that's the thing.
No, but there is still lots of good smaller events, and that's like BS and Beer Canada. It's, you know, an offshoot of the BS and Beer movement in the U.S., and that's what it's about, is creating your local small group where you can have a conversation, have a beer, and talk about building better in whatever shape or way or form you want to. You know, get a few guys together, talk about air quality. Get a few guys together, talk about conserving hot water. Doesn't matter to me. starting to talk is better than just not talking.
Exactly. Dismissing it doesn't make any sense at that point, right? What are some of the, Aaron, like, what are some of the products that you've seen in the last 5 years that you're like, that's kind of interesting? And had a chance to actually install it.
Oh.
Because there's been a lot of testing going on, right?
There's a lot of testing going on. Products that I've seen in the last 5 years and had a chance to install. I would say I'm a little more conservative than that. And probably some of it has to do with location. Is, you know, there's a lot of products I've seen in the last 5 years, very few that I've had a chance to install.
What are we waiting for here? Is it just the right project, or are they still testing?
Some of it's the right project. Okay. Some of it is, you know, what is the actual benefit of this? I mean, you know, we're doing, you know, really well, reasonably well insulated houses and very airtight houses with stuff that's not new. It's been around for a while. Maybe it's new to my location, but it's not new to North America. I'm trying to think of something that I've seen in the last 5 years that we've got to use.
It's a mixed bag. And what I've been learning from speaking to so many different tradespeople that have been tackling this and actually starting the conversation and then trying to do it on site. And it is one thing to be in the science classroom and another thing to be on the job site, right? And so that's why I'm curious about the real world application of certain things. And I don't think there's one bulletproof company that's doing everything perfectly for every single component of a house.
No.
I don't think that exists.
No.
I think it's a collaborative effort, no different than construction. Yeah. You need all the trades to be a part of this and on board to be a part of this. You can't let the rogue ones go and just make holes wherever they want to decide to make a hole. Everybody has to be on the same page.
So I'm going to, there's a little, quick little story.
Sure.
Probably 20 years ago, I went to an Atlantic home warranty course. It was all about building code. And the first thing, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but the instructor, the first thing he did, he said, okay, how many people here build above code? Like everything they do is above code. Everybody in the room put their hand up.
Okay.
Everybody. And so he said, went up to the board, he drew a straight horizontal line. He said, this is the code. And he says, so you guys are all up here? And everybody's like, yeah, we're all up there. And he says, I guarantee you, you guys are all like this. And at the end of that 4 days, just about everybody in that room, well, I know everybody in the room had at least one item somewhere that was below code.
Yeah.
There was one thing that they were doing that actually did not meet code. So it happens.
It happens, right? It's just, but then you get the marketing machine of some clever companies that just say, oh, no, we can use this product for this, and we can use it for this, and we can use it for that. Yes and no.
We almost have to start using products if we're going to continue this conversation.
No, I know. And you got it. That's right. Like you almost got to. But I just, this is about just the conversation. Let's just have the conversation. I just don't want to, like, I guess it's like, don't tell me that every DeWalt tool, for example, can build a house, right? Like, it can and it can't. There's certain tools that different applications or what have you.
Well,
but what I'm trying to get at is that a mixed bag of tools can build that house. Yeah. And everyone comes from different corners of the world. And we want that. We want people to come from Europe, South America. We want them to come from America. We want them from the West Coast. And we want them to bring their input. So we want to listen to that input. So I think the collective is what can build a much better house.
I agree. And if you stick to some of like the sound principles of building well, you know, let's build an airtight assembly. Let's give it a fresh air machine. Let's give it a whack load of insulation. Let's put a big, heavy down parka on. You know,
comfort's going to come with that. These are all great
things. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they are repeatable, and they're easy to do once you decide that you want to do it. And a number of years ago, we just started eliminating things that we offered.
Like?
Fiberglass insulation. You want us to build a house, you're not getting fiberglass insulation.
It's
we don't even bring it up.
See, that's code.
Why does fiberglass insulation have to be code?
No, but I mean that's the bare minimum of code. I'm saying. It's like that's where my first year of construction, I remember an older tradesperson teaching me that minimum code was the glass of water on the edge of the table. And then he was just like, why don't you just put the glass of water in the center of the table? And that's basically, yeah, the glass is perfectly fine there until someone knocks it over, right? But even if it knocks it over here, you still have something to collect it, right? But the minimum is what bothers me. And is the minimum design because of affordability? Track building, subdivisions.
Well, it's designed for affordability, but there's affordability right now, and then there's affordability over the lifespan of that building.
Yes.
So that's quite often in my mind is when I think, okay, is this structure going to last 200 years? Because I've been part of many conversations with clients, homeowners, that, you know, they are the second owner of a house that is 7 years old. They've owned it for a year and a half. And now I'm replacing exterior wall.
Really?
Yeah, it happens.
And what's inside there? Fiberglass?
Fiberglass, well, depending on
whatever the cavity is.
Typically, yeah. For where I live, is 2x6. But
okay, yeah. So you're going 5.5 bat.
Five and a half inch bat. So is the fiberglass part of the problem? Well, part of the problem. It's not the only problem. I mean, insulation is the least of your worries if you've got bulk water getting into your assembly, anyways. But should it happen? No, but it does. So if the materials you're using are at least resilient. Well, it's one last thing that you have to replace. If you've got to replace a little section of wall underneath the window, if you use a product that doesn't care if it gets wet to insulate that wall, well, you pull it out, you set it aside, put the wall back together, and you put that back in. Yeah. Is it a huge savings? No, but it is a savings. Also, if the product doesn't hold water, water is going to hopefully find its way out. And there's less chance that it's going to sit there and keep the wood wet.
Yeah.
So.
Which benefits, right?
Yeah.
There was a product a few years ago. I actually used it on a project, and they discontinued it. And I was really upset that they discontinued it, which was dense-packed cellulose.
You can still get dense-packed cellulose. You have to install it yourself.
Yeah, but this was a different version from Suprema. And it was really good.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it was
really good. And they just don't make it anymore.
They couldn't sell it.
But it made sense to me. And I actually saw, like I was there when it was being installed. Like I saw the purpose of it. And I also saw the thermal scanning of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was a pain in the ass to install. It was a pain in the ass to actually pull off and to get it consistent and to have it all in the cavities, right? But the end result was bang on perfect.
Yeah.
And it was more expensive than going the traditional route. And then they just like, okay, let's get it. They couldn't, it wasn't even a matter of getting it anymore. They couldn't get the installers anymore.
Well, that's the issue everywhere. I just had a conversation with a gentleman in Kelowna. And he is looking at buying his own machine to do dense pack because there's...
Nobody wants to do it.
There is nobody.
Is it because of the market?
There is a market. It's incredibly cheap to install. Like cellulose is cheap.
Yeah.
And it does a really good job at insulating. Properly installed. 4 pounds. Beautiful job. It's dense. It can... I won't say it like it can handle water to a certain extent.
To a certain extent. The main detail that I like was the termite and vermin.
Yeah.
Like that was like nobody's going to nest in that.
Yeah. No, the borate treatment is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. But it can be done. It definitely can be done. We've done it fairly recently. I guess probably, I think we're a year and a half ago, we did it on a project.
What'd you use for the membrane? Did you use an intelligent?
Just a screen.
Just oh, use the screen?
Screen to okay. do the dense pack, and then we did Sega Myrex over top of that.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so see, if the assembly did get wet, it could dry to the inside.
Yeah, no, but that made sense to me. Yeah. Like I was like, this is great. Let's change it. Let's do this. Now, yeah. We're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah. Well, there is people out there that are doing it. There's still people who are,
yeah.
But you've got to find them, and they're busy. The people that are doing it are busy.
What's your perfect wall assembly? Based on your experience today.
No budget. You don't have to ask me this again in 10 years. I'll probably have a different answer.
But doesn't matter. It'll just be built on from that. The principles
based on what I know right now that is available, maybe not everywhere in North America, but it is available in North America,
okay.
Whether it's got to be imported or whatever, I would probably do... 2x6 wall with a wood fiber insulation in the cavity. I would use zip as my structural sheathing, and then I would either do a Larson truss on the outside that filled with, again, wood fiber, or like 8 inches of wood fiber board. Like, just put as much insulation on the outside as I could.
Yep. Okay. And then the inside, you're having another wall for mechanicals?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. You have another little wall in there.
Yeah, whatever, 2x4, yeah. 2x6, another wall.
If we do Larson truss, we could maybe even not bother with insulation in the cavity.
And just run it there because you already have the 8 inches on the outside.
Oh, you'd have 2 feet on the outside if you want.
Yeah.
But, I mean, once you pass, like, R40, R50 on your wall, you're there.
What do you do on the roof if you're continuing that on the wall?
Well, you keep wrapping that up. You keep it continuous.
So you continue as a full assembly then, right?
Well, if you go... So in Canada, vented roofs are still king.
Yeah.
They're still...
They want to circulate the air up there.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
So you just keep wrapping that insulation up and around. And you do, R80 in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And... It's not available yet, but it's going to be available soon. Wood fiber, again. And installers are going to love that when they see it. I don't have science to back it up, but I'm going to say it's about 60% less dust during the install.
Really, yeah?
Yeah.
How are the framers going to treat it? Because I know that some framers are being asked to... it's a different way of building walls now, right?
Yep.
At the framing stage. Yep. Right, that's the thing about it. And so you're asking a bunch of kids that are rock and rollers. They have their ways of doing things, but they want to learn these new techniques, but they need a different wheelhouse now to handle these walls.
So I'm going to say building has never been more technical than it is today.
Yeah.
It is going to continue to go that direction. The sort of rough and tough framer mentality, yeah, that was popular in the 70s and the 80s and whatever. Now we need intelligent, smart people to understand the assemblies, to understand how to efficiently put together. You can't just grind it out. You actually got to make use of your time and put all these details together. Because the framers, whether they like it or not, they're going to put the connective tissue for all these membranes, all these continuous insulation details. Even if they don't tie them together, they're going to have to put the connective tissue in place. And you can't have a bunch of idiots doing it. We need smart, educated people.
They got to do their homework.
Well, we've got to provide the homework. Whether it's provided in the field or it's provided someplace like George Brown or... You name it, wherever.
Shouldn't it be like technically provided as part of the drawings? Like, it's no different than an HVAC design. Like, and I bring this up because listen, I love being nostalgic, and all of a sudden I came across an image of architects back in the day, black and white photo. Their table must have been 10 times the size of this podcast table, and that's the drawing. And they're literally on there just reaching and drawing the lines, and they're drawing every detail. And we knew the drawings back then had every detail. So these details should be in those drawings when these framers are getting them, going, listen, here is all the sustainability, membrane connection points, how it all works, right? And maybe note to framer, note to bricklayer, note to whichever trade 100%. It is. And that they should see it in like clear as day. So, and you know this, when you get into an event, each trade veers right to what is connected to their trade. So those drawings should like that pop, that note should pop out at that person. So they should read it. But the thing is that the architects are not doing that. They're not putting it on them.
Well, you've got, unfortunately, you have homeowners or prospective homeowners. They buy a set of plans off the internet and it's 4 or 5 pages long. It's got kind of a cross section that may or may not apply to you. And the builder is left to develop the details.
As per on site.
Yeah. Well, a good builder is already got a playbook.
Yeah.
And they already like, here, this is what we're doing. And they've got a good relationship with their framer, or maybe they do a lot of it in-house. I mean, us, for example, I'm on site every day. So if there's something missing, we go to the playbook and we pull out a detail that we know works and we use it. If you've got a new framing crew on site and there's nobody there to manage them or help educate them, they're going to do what they know how to do. Whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, they're going to do it. And you can't blame anybody for doing something they don't know how to do. You know, you can't know what you don't know.
All of my projects, and I go back to Blue Green Group, the boots on the ground consultant, ever since I met them, which I was fortunate enough to meet them in the first year of doing construction, I actually allocated a line item for them to be there as my consultant. For them to come here and tell me, Manny, there's a leak there, seal that. Manny, there's a leak here, you got to seal this. They were telling me, watch this, watch that, and just like, consider this idea, consider this. And they would give me, and they would explain it to me. They would dumb it down to the point where like, I totally got what you guys are talking about here. And it was nice to have that extra pair of eyes on the site to explain to me what's going on, right? And I think that all the new builders, the young builders, should be considering that.
It's a fresh set of eyes is yeah. always welcome. A gentleman that I learned a lot from, I would only see him, I was putting together houses for a larger company at that point in time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd show up maybe once or twice a week and he'd walk around and, oh, this and all that. And hey, thank you for pointing that out. It definitely helped me become better at what I do.
Yeah.
But if he hadn't have showed up the first few times, I wouldn't have noticed those things. I wouldn't have caught them. The painter might have caught them, or the drywaller might have caught them.
It's too little, too late at that point.
Well, absolutely.
Right? And yeah. we don't want to be ripping down stuff just to get to things that we could have taken care of at the moment.
Yeah.
Right? How are you finding, I've always noticed there's only been maybe one or two inspectors have some really interesting conversations, like literally great building envelope conversations. Like they're like, we're past the point of inspection. It's all done. It's all good. Don't worry, Manny. We'll sign it off. It's all good. Yeah. And just tell me more about this. And we start talking about it. Right. But are you seeing that with today's inspectors that they're coming in? Because this is not the norm way of building. Yeah. And the inspectors get involved now. Right.
So depending on where you live in this great nation, where things are at. And I know, some people have had some great difficulties using new products. We always have, at least in recent history, we've gone the route of like, hey, this is what we're using. And if you want to see this stuff, you have to come before we install it. I'm going to use Seeger Myrex as an example.
Yeah.
For the listeners who aren't familiar with Seeger Myrex is a smart vapor retarder, but you can't see through it. So if we start insulating and putting our smart vapor retarder up, you can't see the framing.
Word. Yeah, we got to take our word.
Yeah. So we take lots of pictures and we make sure we reach out to the inspector and say, hey, if you want to see this, come this week because next week we're covering it up. And usually they do. Sometimes they don't, but, you know, that's what pictures are for.
But it's still sad to me that 6 mil poly is just the go-to, tuck tape.
It's actually scary. It's going to be, and again, house I don't wrap. Care what size.
I'm going on both sides. Yeah. Like, it's still scary to me.
Well, it wasn't when we had real winter.
Yeah.
And because A lot of builders did a really good job of detailing their 6 mil poly. It was actually our air barrier.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually a vapor barrier. We were using it as an air barrier. That's why it works so well in a lot of places. But we've also seen a lot of places where it didn't work so well. But you already know, but I'm going to ask anyways. What side of the wall is the vapor barrier supposed to be on?
The vapor barrier?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be on the outside wall.
Well, yeah, but is it on the warm or the cold side?
No. It's supposed to be on the warm side, isn't it?
On the warm side. Yeah. Okay. So it's on the warm side. So we've got vapor barrier on the inside. How many people have air conditioning in their house now?
Everybody.
All right. Would you say that cooling, the amount of cooling that's going into houses is increasing every year?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
I would say on average.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah.
If you were in the south, they build the wall the other way around.
Yeah.
We're in the north, so we build it this way. Yeah. We build our homes for heat and not for cold. Yeah. We should build our homes for both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll say you live in a place where traditionally you have, 6,500 heating degree days.
Okay.
I would argue that very quickly you're going to be in a situation where you're going to be, in the next 20 years, you're going to be in a situation where you've got just as many cooling degree days as you do heating degree days. And if you have a house that has 6 mil poly in it, half the year,
you're going to have condensation.
Half the year, simple you're in trouble.
As that. Yeah.
So the only thing that might save you is if you happen to have a really airtight assembly. It might save you. If no air can actually get to that point, then it's not dragging water with it. But how many people can guarantee that?
Well, that's where I go back to the code, where it's designed a certain way and it's designed for that climate, where it's like this is prediction of colder days.
Yeah.
But then when we don't have the colder days, what happens to the house assembly? It begins to fail.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, right? And I know that the one resistance that I had with every building consultant that I ever spoken to was skylights, vented skylights, vented skylights and vaulted ceiling treatments, not tunnels.
Yep.
And I've only ever installed vented skylights in vaulted ceilings for a purpose.
Yep.
So they do work, but it's that exclusive detail, right? And that will give you the freedom of reducing the amount of AC cooler days that you're requiring in a building structure. Because exactly what you're doing is you're letting all that hot air escape, yeah. Right? But you can't create a 8-foot-high bedroom with a tunnel that goes up another 10 feet with a 2x4 skylight there. It's not going to do what it's supposed to do at that point, right? It'll give you some natural daylight. You'll see a little bit of blue and some clouds walking by, and that's about it. But it's not going to benefit the home.
No, you have passive ventilation is an excellent way to...
I love it.
Yeah.
There's a structure in Spain that uses that as louvers, right?
Yeah.
And they show you how there's no AC here, but the entire building is cooled down as a result of this, where you have the hot air escaping through the main, through the roof itself, right?
Oh, when I was in Switzerland, we visited a factory, and the name of the factory escapes me, but we were all up in the meeting room, and then the windows just opened.
Automatically?
Automatically. Like the temperature hit a certain point in that room and the windows all opened on that floor.
And you felt the breeze.
And you could feel the air coming from the floor below or the basement or whatever.
Yeah.
And the temperature dropped probably 4 or 5 degrees. Just boom.
Do you remember the early days of spray foam?
Yes.
And I vividly remember this with an inspector, right? Like fighting him. With acoustical sealant, 6 mil poly, taped and tuck tape. And then they got rid of that a few years later when they discovered that exact scenario that you just described.
Yep.
And it was just rotting all the timber, rotting all the timber. And then they got rid of it. Then they started talking about intelligent membranes and other ways of building the wall assembly, right? I think the OBC needs to start getting closer to that wall assembly that you talked about regarding if there's no budget.
Yeah.
It's not there yet.
No, it's not there, but a roll of 6 mil poly, $100. It is cheap. Absolutely, it is cheap. What I would say is an extra $400 or $500 on, an average build takes you to cheap insurance. does. Really cheap insurance.
It does, yeah.
Adds longevity to a structure. My numbers are a little off. I know they are. I'm a little on the low side for her, but that's a...
For the role? No. Yeah, but okay. Million-dollar construction budget.
Yeah.
That line item? What
is
that?
It's nothing. It's nothing.
You're spending more on the coffees for the crew during the first third of the build when everybody's loving each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, that's the cost. That's what we're talking about here, yeah. Which is nothing, in my opinion, right? Where do you think we're going to go with construction? I mean, you're going to be out of this game probably in 2-3 decades. You're going to be out of this game. You're going to hand it off to somebody else. It's going to be someone else's responsibility.
Eventually I'm going to have to set the tools down. That's the reality of it.
But I'm going with the question is like, where is there a way that Canada can get back on that 70s sustainability where we can be a leader now instead of a follower?
If we want to be leaders, we've got a lot of work to do. Yeah. We've got a lot of work to do because we're already behind. There are some amazing people who live in this country that are very up on energy efficiency, sustainability. We've had some great minds leave this country because, you know, we weren't willing to listen or we didn't want to do better.
Where'd they go?
Some went south.
Okay.
Some went south. Actually, Dr. Joe will be at the Building Science Symposium.
Okay.
And, you know, he's originally from this neck of the woods. I'm not sure if he's going to see a Leafs game while he's here or not, but...
We'll see.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Is he enjoying himself better building there than here?
He doesn't build anything.
He devises, no?
He investigates stuff, writes books.
Okay.
Builder's Guide to the Cold Climate. In my opinion, it was like the Bible for building well in Canada for a long time.
Okay.
You know, there's some things that he's improved recently in that, but... You know, 10, 15 years ago, it had everything you needed to know about building a well-built, efficient home. It's there. The information's all there. We just have to decide we want to use it. And it's not new.
It just hasn't been absorbed lately.
Well, it hasn't been absorbed. 1978,
yeah.
Conservation House.
Yeah, simple. Like, look into that.
Yeah.
Just do your own research on it, right? Just find out about it, right?
Absolutely.
I know that, I don't know if it's hit you guys on the East Coast, but it's already on the West Coast. I think it's coming here to Ontario. No more single-family dwellings with wood-burning fireplaces.
That hasn't happened yet for us.
Not yet, right?
Yeah, no.
Well, West has happened. They're talking here, and now it's going to be there. And eventually it's going to be no gas in the house for any new dwellings that are built. So no fireplaces. You'll have to go electric fireplaces, right? And then I guess... We're back on propane tanks for barbecue. If you want to have a barbecue,
You got to have a barbecue, man.
I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to predict the future. I'm trying to figure out what a new family dwelling is going to be like if there's no gas entering that home.
Well, I do know of a gentleman who has a wood pellet barbecue, and he pumps out some pretty phenomenal meat. There's always a way, right?
There's always a way, yeah. I remember when I had a plant tour of Brenlo Trim here in Toronto, they ended up doing a partnership with somebody to create the pellets out of all the waste from the sawdust because you can only imagine what a facility like that that's churning out so many different profiles out of poplar, how much sawdust there is there.
100%.
Right? So they just like, let's make some pellets out of this thing, right?
Yeah.
Which made a lot of sense.
We, for a number of years, bought wood brick from our molding manufacturer, Colonial Moldings in Fredericton, New Brunswick, all their waste, all the sawdust, all the chips, they would take it, collect it, and they would smash it into bricks just under pressure, just however many thousand pounds of force and just smash it. So it's already super dry because they're using it for, you know, creating casing and baseboard and stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's already been,
Yeah. So it, you know, you could... Burn it in the wood stove all winter and carry out like one bucket of ash, right? It was clean.
It made a lot of sense.
Yeah. So stuff like that, I'm not going to say it needs to necessarily go by the wayside completely.
No.
But let's pay attention to what we are using for our heat sources. But at the same time, we have a client that was going to have a propane fireplace. And once we did our mid-construction blower door test, they're like, yeah, okay, so maybe we can go electric. Because
you're losing all the air out of there, right?
Well, I mean, we were going to have to provide makeup air
okay.
for the propane fireplace to actually work.
Yeah.
And, you know, the house heats itself, basically, with the south-facing glazing.
But I go back to the comfort argument. You can't eliminate all the things that make a home a home.
No, you can't.
Right? There's got to be a little bit of give and take at that point where, sure, that's going to be a hole in the house. I understand that. But also the idea of being at home, relaxing, reading a book, watching TV, family get together, whatever, and having a fire. Comfort, home, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've gathered around fire for tens of thousands of years.
Yep.
Do we need an actual real fire, though? Or do we just need that space to gather?
I'm curious about your house. So if there's no budget, mechanically speaking, what would you do?
No budget, mechanically speaking, I would probably do air to water. So you'd have all your hydronic heat would be air to water.
Okay.
And yeah.
How are you cooling?
You can do
with the air.
You can do that too. You can do air to water cooling now too.
Okay. So you, Geo, you're talking about?
No, not you. Like instead of air to air, you go air to water.
So you're doing a hydronic system.
Yep. With an air.
Who's making that system that can
There's
do
a few
both.
Out there now. Warmboard. Warmboard makes one.
So they have their mechanical side of it as well, yep. too? Okay. I haven't seen that. All right.
Or, you know, you can do your hydronic heat and have, if there's no budget, then you can have an air handler too. And
to do that.
Doing that too, way too. So.
And then how are you, I guess you're still moving your air through an ERV then?
Yeah. You got to have an ERV.
Okay, yeah.
You need, got to have that. You need fresh air.
I agree with you.
It's going to be tight.
I agree. I'm not a fan. Forced air is a North American mentality.
Yep.
That's 100% North American mentality.
Yep.
Right? And I've never been a fan of it. I've always been a fan of either a boiler or a hydronic. Like yep. that cold feet, warm feet mentality is the better way to go. But then you can still use the HRV, ERV kind of mentality to yep. move the air. You still need to move the air.
Yeah. Well, I've got hot water heat in my house. We have an HRV. We don't have an ERV, but we have an HRV.
And it works.
It works.
Totally works that way, right?
I don't have any air conditioning.
But do you really require it?
No, I open the window.
You have any skylights?
What's that?
Skylights?
No, no skylights.
You'll see a huge difference. I love mine. Oh, yeah, I cracked it a month ago.
So the average wind speed on the island is also 20 kilometers an hour.
Okay, so you open up a window. You get a fan, basically, at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it kind of cools the house at that point.
Typically.
I think people have gotten so used to just be climatized. Like, just, like, turn from one season to the next.
Well, we're creatures of comfort.
Yeah.
We really are. And when I grew up, I didn't have air conditioning. That was a luxury that,
yeah,
you know.
We didn't have it either. Yeah.
And there would be like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks out of the summer where you would lay in bed at night and sweat to death. And that was.
If you want some coolness, you could be in the basement.
Yeah.
Stay in the basement, right?
I'm not saying that we have to be uncomfortable. That's not what I'm saying, because we all deserve comfort. But I think to a certain extent, the level of instant gratification that we're used to, maybe we need to adjust that somewhat. Like you go over to places in Europe, there's no air conditioning. Their air conditioning is passive, just like those windows that open. And, you know, that's it. But their energy costs are more.
Yeah.
So what are you paying a kilowatt here?
Here?
Yeah, here.
It hasn't really dramatically increased lately. I can't remember exactly. I haven't looked at it lately, but the last little bit. Yeah. I know our gas has gone through the roof, obviously. Probably about 2.5 times on the gas side of things, right? But it's not a lot here.
It's going up. It's going up.
But see, that's where I'm, like, that's the concern I have. I guarantee you I'm not a fortune teller, but I'm telling you right now, the kilowatt price,
yep.
next decade will probably be double.
Oh, easily. You know.
So everyone who's actually going that route, just expect the bills to fluctuate because of that.
So I always go back to the first time I went to Europe. Gasoline, at that time I rented a car, I was going someplace, and it was like $1.98 a liter or something like that is what it converted to Canadian.
Okay.
This is like 1992.
Oh, yeah.
So I think at home it was 50 cents a liter maybe or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So energy costs over there 30 plus years ago was, four times the cost here. And it didn't slow down over there.
No.
It's not going to slow down here. Your energy costs are going to continue to go up. So efficiency is important. However we get there, I'm not going to tell somebody you have to do this or have to do that, but you have to be mindful that, you know, this building is going to continue to increase in operational costs.
So that's where the argument goes to the building assembly is far more valuable than the mechanical assembly.
Yeah.
Make the walls thicker, more insulation in the attic, better windows, do all those things far more than buying the best bells and whistles, mechanically speaking, because you're just going to use less energy to heat cool that house.
Absolutely. And future-proof it.
Yeah.
You know, put an extra mounting block on the outside of the house where all your services come in. Just a blank one. Something new comes along in 30 years. Whoever the tech is showing up goes, that's my spot.
Yeah.
That's where I'm driving this pipe in. That's where I'm putting this cable in, whatever. They pull a mountain block off, whatever they're using in 30 years from now, a tape, something that comes out of a foam gun, air seal it, insulate it, put a mountain block back on. Flashing's already there. Everything's already done.
I agree with you totally. Because now you're predicting it, like what's going to happen, right?
Well, we know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, give the cable guy a spot before you're done building. That way he doesn't come and drive a hole through the side of the house and gob it up with a little bit of silicone when he's done.
How much do you think the wall assembly, I mean, I know that I talked about the numbers being an additional 5 to 20%, but just the wall assembly, if we were actually to do that proper wall assembly on the exterior, on the interior, the membranes and everything and the insulation value, it's got to be greater than that 5 to 20 points, right?
I don't think it is.
You think it's still within that?
I don't think it is. I really don't think.
See, that's a no-brainer to me then. It should be done. That should be in the code. It should just be designed.
Depending where you live and the market you're working in, like Vancouver, they're already step code 5. So there's things they have to do already. So for them to go to like passive level, it's the 5% or maybe even less.
Yeah.
You come out to New Brunswick, Canada, well, it's going to be the 20. Maybe it'll be 25, but it's
not. But that's got something to do with also accessibility and getting the product there,
right?
Well,
it's comparables.
Yeah.
But what is the cost of a house comparably to build? So if you've got somebody who's building to the 2015 code, National Building Code, well, of course, you're going to look like you're 25% more. But compared to what they're doing in Vancouver, well, maybe it's only 8% more. You know, it's very hard when we start throwing around percentages because you have to actually lay out what those comparables are, maybe not on either on a local or a national basis. I don't know. I don't have a good answer on that one because...
Well, see, I want to compare assemblies. Compare that.
So let's just compare efficiency.
Yeah. That's a different world at that point, right?
Yeah.
So
good, better, best. So, and quite often that's what we do anyways, is you get a good, better, best.
I'm just trying, every conversation I've had with clients, it's always been an uphill battle to explain to them to get to better. And ideally you want to be best. And then you're trying to tell them, and it's like, you've seen this in their faces. You try to tell them a 12-inch cavity wall. You try to tell them that or something. And they calculate. That's when they do the math really quick. They'll calculate the perimeter of that corner wall and how much square footage is being removed from my space now.
Yeah.
But it's not about what happened to the assembly? What happened to the efficiency? What about the house that's going to last a long, long time? Well, we're not going to be here past 15 years, yeah. according to stats, 13 years.
Well, that was the beautiful thing about the Larson truss.
It's on the outside.
We're not removing anything. We're putting it all outboard.
Yeah.
Your space is your space.
Yeah.
So there's always a way. There really is. It's just, you know, your average homeowner, when you tell them you're going to use a Larson truss, they're like, what? They got to go Google that,
of course,
or whatever, or you've got to show them an example. And if you're a builder who wants to build better and you've never had the opportunity to, say, use a Larson truss, it might be hard for you to sell a client on that idea. You almost got to wait till a client comes to you looking for it. So now you've got an example in your playbook that you can take somebody to and show them and say, no, we did this house 3 years ago. We know what the energy costs are now. You know, depending on how you use your house, yours might be better or they might be worse.
But there's always that big army where you get certain clients that have the money to do this properly, assembly-wise, efficiency-wise. Yeah. But they roll in with the 48-inch burners of stoves and you know where I'm going, right?
Yeah.
The hood. Makeup air.
I've been there. I've been there.
It's I've installed terminations for hoods that are. Remember the old muscle cars and the hood scoop? Like they were bigger than those. You know what I mean? And it's like you can't have both. It's like you got to choose one or the other if you want to do this. Go down this road.
It's a balancing act, and you're never gonna get it perfect. I don't think it's ever going to be perfect.
No.
That's an illusion, but no. Education, also cultural. We have to have a cultural shift.
Yeah.
And that's going to take some time.
Were you in Switzerland recently? Did you go to the SIGA thing?
2 years ago now.
2 years ago to the SIGA thing, the event? Yeah?
Yeah, we went on a SIGA factory tour and a few other things, yeah.
How was that experience? Good?
Amazing.
Yeah?
Amazing.
Yeah, I like what they're doing. I know Hans has been on the show a couple of times, and he works for them. And he's always whenever I got a question, I'll just send it to him. Right?
Never once did they try and sell.
No, that's not the purpose of it. No,
anything. It was strictly educational.
Yeah,
and you know, you got to see a really interesting company culture, like I follow some companies for their culture. This is very interesting to see how they treat employees, how they foster growth in individuals. Hmm. And SIGA is one of those companies that I follow. They make pretty good products too.
Yeah, no, they make great products. I think they're having a challenge penetrating the North American market.
They're actually pretty big in Canada.
Yeah?
Like, wow. Comparably, like,
yeah.
US, Canada, they sell more in Canada than they do in the US.
Yeah, that's what's interesting.
So we have more people doing passive house and stuff like that, I think. So they have a market here, and but they spend some money at IBS on marketing too.
Yeah.
So it's coming. Their tapes are incredible.
No, I know for
really
sure.
They are incredible.
Yeah, they're totally I like what they're doing. It makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
Is it possible in your opinion? A properly built, passive, sustainable home anywhere?
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter what densely populated urban street. Doesn't matter if you're in the middle of nowhere.
Arctic Circle to doesn't the matter. South Pole. There's a way to do it.
There's a way to do it,
There's
right?
a way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it means it's going to be built somewhere else and shipped in.
True.
But there's always a way.
And you got to have the right team that's going to be on board.
Yeah.
To build it, right?
Yeah. Or put the puzzle pieces together.
Yeah. So that's where it is, right?
So, but that goes back to, you know, education. And you really do have to have a brain to be in this industry today. So it's not for dummies.
No. You got to learn. You a huge fan of the assembly going on, the new framing techniques and SIP systems and everything like that? Like,
we use ZIP pretty much exclusively.
Yeah.
It's one of the systems that is intuitive for most carpenters, at least I find. And locally for us, it doesn't blow off. It doesn't blow off.
Okay.
We have two seasons. We have summer and we have windy. That's it. Those are our seasons. Yeah. So there's nothing flapping in the breeze. You know, I like plywood too, but I've had some issues with plywood lately. And their products, they're really good. They legitimately stand up to the weather. You know, a number of years ago, we had, we used Advantech for their Uberwoods floor.
Yeah.
And we had freezing rain come through with a snowstorm, followed by more freezing rain. And
before you can get it protected?
I didn't have the roof on.
Oh, wow.
I had the walls up. I wanted to, like, the trusses were there. I couldn't fly them.
It's too windy.
It was wind. Couldn't fly them. This came through. We ended up with like 2.5 inches of ice sitting on the floor. And that sat on that floor until I could get it closed in and start getting a little bit of heat going enough that I could get busted out and get it out the door. You wouldn't even know that anything had happened. And like, it's like after that, you show clients pictures of that. It was like
the tour. I didn't survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I've got a set of sawhorses made out of it that have been through the Boer War, you know, and they're good to go.
They're good. Are you seeing an uptick? Because Beck, BECC, modular building, and things like that. It's an interesting world.
It is. Okay. I like modular, and modular definitely has a place. And I think it is going to be one of our solutions. It's never going to completely replace
no.
stick building.
No.
Is modular going to become more mainstream?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. I 100% believe that it will. There's still going to be applications where somebody's going to have to go someplace, put a wall together stick by stick. And even if you do modular, there's still portions of that build that have to be tied together or lifted into place. There's some little connecting piece that's got to be framed on site. It makes sense to do it there. So it's not eliminating the trades.
No.
But you show me a company that has capacity to do more right now. Like, I mean, just like any business that has the people
they
actually
don't.
Build more.
They don't.
No.
My concern with it is modular is great, but there are no modular units that are just completely one-off, dropped in place, done. There is some component of detail that has to get connected to, I guess, another piece or something like you just said. And it's that connective points.
Yeah.
If you don't have the right person that knows flap A or whatever, has to back off and this has to enter and you don't do that correctly, then that connecting point fails. That's absolutely the part of the modular that I have concerns with.
Again, this isn't new stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's We've been doing stuff. It for a while.
Well,
I know.
Yeah. This is a company is under different ownership now, but at the time, the gentleman who owned it at the time escapes me, but he had Prestige Homes in Sussex, New Brunswick.
Okay.
And they were doing a 28-unit apartment building, and I'd done some work with them, and they, hey, can you give us a hand for a week just to get this tight? And they handed out a binder to every crew that was going to be involved, and it was the playbook. This is what you do. This is what you do. And, you know, it's not hard. Somebody's got to invest the time in making it into a system. You've watched a well-run framing crew before.
Oh, of course, yeah.
They have a system.
Yep.
You know, this guy does this.
But the businesses that are doing this, they have a system too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if you have a plan and you have a system, you know, and you can do it well, it's feasible, 100% feasible.
Did you see recently someone was sharing a post about an entire home being built out of OSB?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Wall assemblies, stairs, framing members, structural components. I'm watching this video. Everything's done out of OSB. Just different thicknesses of OSB, just whatever, laminated together, just all OSB, right? Yeah. Chipboard.
Yep.
the one comment I didn't like about the person that was presenting it was like, and you don't require any skilled labor to put this together. And I cringed and I had to leave a comment saying the solution to the affordable housing and building better is not by inviting people who don't have skills to do it.
Yeah.
It's by training the people who do have the skills to do it and to do it better. That's the solution here. So I was against it. I was just like, I've just lost my interest in whatever component you're selling here now.
Well, we don't live in a place where, you know, you're going to hitch up your wagon, go on a 30-day wagon train, carve your home out of a piece of land and put it together yourself. Like
I was packing my bags, ready to go, Aaron.
That ship has sailed. I mean, yes, there are still situations where you can do that. And, you know, kudos to anybody who does build their own home for themselves. But your average person is not going to do that. No. They're going to hire a professional to build it. So, yes, we need to make or at least put the formula in place that allows people to be more efficient at what they do. Or work longer. That's what they're doing over in Europe. Modular factories. Somebody who's, you know, 60, 65, they don't want to lift heavy stuff anymore. They don't want to work in the snow. They don't want to work in the rain.
Contained.
Well, you go to this beautiful, well-lit, climate-controlled environment. Every time you turn around, there's a crane.
I've been in it. I've been thoroughly impressed by it. You have tradespeople walking around, fully geared up, PPE to the nines, in a climate-controlled environment. Everything is there. There's sections of whatever material you need. There's sections of whatever hardware you need. And it's just an assembly line. And you just, in a controlled environment, build homes, right? Which is fascinating. They need to expand. We need to get some sort of government subsidies. Like, I don't know. Like, we need to grow that. I think there's a lot of tradespeople, especially in the winter months, that I would love to be working in that environment.
We also have, there's also a stigma, at least in the bulk of North America, attached to modular housing.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know, because a lot of the companies that produced modular housing, they also produced mini homes or trailer homes. So there's an aspect that, you know, it's a little less than.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be. You know, there's other people doing, you know, panelized and modular homes that are extremely high end. You just got to, you know, get on your phone, Google.
You just got to start doing some homework.
It's there.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
I want to do the 12 questions with you. I know we got to wrap up because you guys got to get out of here. And I appreciate your time stopping by to be here. I think I covered everything I was going to ask you about. I don't think there's anything else. Did you want to share?
No. Up until just recently,
How's the air doing in here?
We're starting to tank a little bit, but we closed the door.
We closed the door. Where are we at right now?
We're 1,100 parts per million. But there's also been a lot of hot air in this room. So
talking. What's your favorite construction word?
Flashing.
What's your least favorite tool?
My least favorite tool. I don't know. I love tools, man.
Give me
my least favorite one. We'll come back to that one. I'll come.
What construction sound do you love?
Oh, it's just that hammer, man. Somebody's just on it, you know.
When the site's going,
yeah,
it's going perfectly. Favorite beverage?
Besides water, I love a good scotch. I love a good scotch. Coffee, too. But
coffee? What turns you on and off in construction?
Good flashings, bad flashings.
That question usually has, you know, the yin-yang of all of that, right? Favorite curse word?
Oh, you know, a well-placed F-bomb is appropriate now and again.
Favorite vehicle in the world? Any mode of transportation?
One that goes. One that works.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Man, just those moments where you could just be in it. We've already talked about this. This is still my favorite moment, and I remember it. And we have time for the story?
Of course.
So, and we've told, I told you this story, I think, last time we talked. I can't remember whether it was for Christmas or my birthday, but I got this little wooden tool set.
Oh, yeah.
That I opened remember. Right up.
Yeah, I remember. And I got the same one.
And I was out in the wood pile and hours disintegrated. And I had to get called in. It was dark. I was just, was already supposed to be in the house. So they had to come looking for me.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
It's going to still be in construction. It's just going to either...
Consulting?
It'll transition to consulting, and maybe I'm just going to sit in the shop and play with my table saw and...
I could see you doing consulting for sure. Consulting during the day, half days maybe, and the other half, wood shop.
Yeah.
Build stuff. Days.
I like that.
What profession would you not like to do?
I wouldn't want to be a dentist. No, that'd be a horrible job.
Least favorite tool?
Least favorite tool. I'm going to go. I love all tools, man. They're least favorite tool. I can't think of a tool that I hate. They all have a purpose.
I think of one least favorite tool. Someone sent me some tool asking me if I would endorse it.
Oh, like a bad tool? Yeah. Well, that's a different story.
It was an accessory for a tool. And I just like, yeah, that doesn't work for me. Like, I don't understand what that is. It doesn't make any sense to me. It was like an extension to a tape measure to help you with like really long runs.
Okay. I don't never had that before, but I can't think of a tool that I dislike.
Nothing at all.
Like they all have a purpose. There's a reason they're a tool.
It's true.
If shovel, there you go. I'll give you a shovel.
It's never been redesigned. It's always going to be that way. It has one purpose. Well, no, two purposes depending on how your marriage is. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Not bad.
I actually forgot to ask you, are you Metabo guy now these days? Or
So Metabo sent a few things my way.
Yeah. Are they good? Do you like them?
So far, so good. So far, so good. Yeah. You know, they basically said, we like what you're doing. We want to help support you. Keep educating people. Can we send you some stuff? I'm like, okay, I'll try it. But if it's not good, it's
as simple as that. That's how it works.
Their saw is light, though. It is light.
Yeah.
And I messed up my elbow just about a year ago. And so I was having trouble, like usually I'm right-handed, but sometimes you got to cut with your left hand. And I was having trouble with my other saw. Just
muscle. Yeah, a little kink in there, huh?
Yeah. And that pound, it makes a difference.
How is the Flash Me coming along?
Flash Me Day is excellent.
It's good.
This is the fourth annual. More people involved than ever.
August, isn't it?
August 26th.
26th,
August
right?
26th, International Flashing Awareness Day.
Yeah.
All Make right, a man. Post about your favorite flashing detail. Make a post about your epic flashing fail you found.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Everyone reach out. You can follow him. BigDogConstruction.gm on IG. Got any questions? Yeah, your posts are basically class every day. Pretty much.
Try to.
It's the, class.
Like sometimes I miss.
Good class, right?
Sometimes I miss. But it's, 5 seconds of what you should do today. So, and ask Kelsey. If anybody ever has a chance, ask Kelsey what's good about it and what's bad about it.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it, man.
All right.
Take care. We're out of here.